Welcome back, everybody, to the Week 6 edition of the Giants Goal Line Podcast. I'm Ralph Macchiano, the NFL insider for SNY and SNY.TV, and it's a depressing time to be a Giants fan. There's no doubt about that. We're talking about three straight losses now that has everybody pretty much ready to jump off a cliff here. It's hard to imagine if you looked at the schedule at the beginning of the season, you would have expected a lot from the Giants going into Minnesota and then to Green Bay, but that 2-0 start certainly got everybody excited, and that has turned to a lot of disappointment, a lot of worry, and a lot of questions. We're going to get to a lot of your questions. I solicited some on social media from my Twitter account at rvacchianosny. We got some great ones. I'll be answering those for you a little bit later, and so will John Fennelly, our SNY Giants blogger. He'll be joining us, too, to answer some of your questions, and we'll take a look back certainly at the Giants' loss to the Green Bay Packers and look ahead to their game against the Baltimore Ravens and see what they have to do to pull out of their slump. And we'll go in depth looking at Eli Manning's problems and some of the other problems that are associated with this giant three-game losing streak. One quick programming note before we do all of that. If you're a fan of the Mets, Jets, Giants, Knicks, Rangers, or Islanders, and you want to listen to all of our original podcasts all in one place, just subscribe to the SNY.TV audio network on the iPhone podcast app or whatever app you use to listen to your podcasts. However, if you just want to listen to this podcast week by week, search SNY.TV Giants wherever you listen to your podcasts. Make sure to click subscribe and please rate and review our channel. So we start this podcast looking at the guy who seems to be getting most of the blame for the Giants' issues, and that, of course, is Eli Manning, their franchise quarterback, being paid a lot of money to do a lot better than he did against the Green Bay Packers, just 18 of 35 for 199 yards and a touchdown. He has now two touchdowns and three interceptions in the last four games. That's a bit of a problem for a guy who's supposed to be leading an offense that's supposed to be, and really the previous 2 years had been, one of the best in the league. It leads some to wonder whether he is, at 35 years old, starting to show signs of the inevitable decline, if there's another reason why he's not clicking. So I took a look at Eli Manning's first five games, and I know this is hard to believe, but it's really not as bad as it seems when you look at the numbers. Keep in mind that he did well enough against Dallas to pull out a victory. Not great. It wasn't completely in sync with the receivers, but he did have three touchdowns and a couple hundred yards in that game. He threw for well over 350 in each of the next two. And I shouldn't say, well, it was 368 in the New Orleans game. It was exactly 350 in the Redskins game. Now, he didn't pile up the touchdowns in those games, but keep in mind what happened, especially against New Orleans. New Orleans, there were a couple of drops in the end zone. There were also two fumbles by his receivers inside Saints territory. You hold on to the ball a little bit, and suddenly that game looks a lot better. And against the Redskins, they had 11 penalties. And, his center was thrown out of the game. He still completed 65% of his passes for 350 yards and a touchdown. So there are things that are working against him which aren't necessarily his fault. That being said, he was not great against the Vikings. That is one of the best defenses in the NFL, so you might want to give him a little break on that. And he was just terrible against the Packers. And this is the game where you have to worry a little bit. Like I said, 18 to 35 for 199 yards, but it doesn't tell the story of how many open receivers he just flat out missed. There were opportunities there. Some of them were rushed, no doubt about it, but he's used to playing with a pass rush in his face. This offensive line has been a problem, as you know, for a long time, and he has found ways in the past to thrive anyway, and he's just not doing it, certainly in the last two games. I do not at all believe that this is the sign of the inevitable decline, because the previous games were just too good. And on top of that, you're looking at a guy, there's been no sign in recent years. I mean, he had two of his best seasons under Ben McAdoo to suddenly have a drop off and to say, well, his career is nearing its end. It wouldn't make any sense. It doesn't happen that fast. I think more likely this is just what we've seen from Eli Manning many, many, many times over his career. This is one of the downs. He has bad games that you just can't believe, and somehow he turns it around. And I do think he will more likely than not turn things around. This right now is an offense that, you know, they thought would surely be in the top 10, and instead it ranks 19th in the league, 27th in scoring. There are too many weapons, and the quarterback is just too good for that to continue. So I don't know what's wrong with Eli Manning other than he just does not have a working cast around him, and he had a bad game, maybe two. I do think it's going to get better. Our second big storyline from this week is one of the ways that things maybe could get better from Eli Manning, and it's about the left tackle, Eric Flowers, and whether, as some people are theorizing, that maybe he's just a bust of a first-round pick. Now, I don't think that at all. I do believe that he is struggling right now, and this is coming off a rookie year that was probably not as good as most people expected. What makes it worse for Eric Flowers is he's become penalty prone. He has been piling up the penalties, six in the first six games, including a personal foul, coming off a season where he had 10. It's way too many for an offensive lineman. You can't be at that pace all year long. And now he's showing some signs of immaturity. There was a report after the game against the Packers that he supposedly shoved a ESPN reporter because he didn't, not only that, I don't think there were even questions asked. He just didn't want him there asking questions. I guess he was a little too sensitive to the criticism. You know, the Giants basically did nothing. They made him apologize, and they said they'll keep their discipline in-house. And the NFL is apparently looking into it, and he could be facing a fine. But all that pushed aside, it just shows a level of immaturity that, you know, I understand that Eric Flowers is still pretty young. We're talking about a 23-year-old kid who is obviously, he needs to grow up and learn how to be a professional. But he is a pro, and he needs to be better than that. He needs to be in control of himself on the field. And if he does that, he'll know his assignments better. There won't be as many penalties. Right now, he just looks lost. He's being pushed around. All the fire and the power that the Giants saw, and when they told us why they drafted him, they talked about, you know, how quickly he could develop and how much of a beast he could be at left tackle. We're not seeing any of it right now, and that's a bit of an issue. If that gets better, and there's no replacement sitting there waiting for him behind him, if that gets better, if he gets better and starts to mature a little quicker, that line will get better, and I think you'll turn around and see Eli Manning suddenly having a lot more time to throw downfield and find his receivers, and his stats will look a lot better too. And the third thing that we're looking at this week, the $200 million Giants defense, now 17th in the league, dead last in sacks with only four. Is this proof that they made a mistake in free agency? Well, a lot of people would tell you yes. And certainly, I've said this before, free agency is an absolutely terrible way to build a team. And we knew that going in. But here's the thing. The Giants had no choice. They were the 32nd ranked defense in the NFL last year, a historically bad defense, according to the numbers. They didn't have ready-made replacements to come in because their drafting for years had been terrible. The only thing they could do was what they did, which is they went out and found the best defensive end on the market, the best defensive tackle, the best cornerback. They re-signed Jason Pierre-Paul to add to the mix, and they hoped that that would get better. I think they knew that that alone would not get them into the top 10 or top 5, which is maybe what you'd expect for a $200 million spending spree. But they got better, and it is better. It's hard to believe with only, you know, you saw the Janoris Jenkins come down with their first two takeaways of the season. Olivier Vernon with only one sack. Jason Pierre-Paul with only one sack. None from the guys at defensive tackle. That's certainly not what you expect, but that is an improvement over last year. You have to think back for a little bit about how disastrous that defense was, how it wore down in the fourth quarters. You're not seeing that as much this year, and I think you're going to see that even less as the season goes along. So, no, the production is not what you would expect for the money. And yes, I guess it is probably proof that free agency remains the worst way to build a football team or even a unit on a football team. But considering how far down the rankings and into the depths that the Giants defense was last season, this really isn't that bad at all. And really overall, try to remember, they're just 2-3. The Cowboys, the Eagles with rookie quarterbacks, they're coming back to the pack at some point. Right now, as the Giants try to find themselves, as they get through Eli's struggles, the defense's struggles, the line struggles, it's all about just staying afloat I still believe somewhere they're going to make a run and find their ninth win, maybe 10th win that'll get them into the playoffs. All right, those are my three big storylines. Let's get to your questions now, and you've got a lot of them. And for that, we're going to bring in our SNY Giants blogger, John Fennelly. John, thanks for joining me today. How are you doing?
Very good, Ralph. How are you doing today?
Well, I'm doing a little better than the Giants are doing right now, and the Jets, too. Everybody's a little bit of a mess in New York football.
I know that.
Yeah. And we got, understandably, a lot of listeners, a lot of followers on Twitter who are filled with angst right about now and have overloaded us with questions. We're going to do a little something different with our podcast today. We're going to take questions from them and answer them here. We'll just take turns doing that. So you got the first question, John. Why don't you go ahead and begin?
Yeah, sure. Ben McAdoo, as we know, is the second youngest head coach in the NFL. He's 39 years old, behind Miami's Adam Gase. And the Giants seem to be a little less disciplined this year, Ralph, now that Tom Coughlin is gone and McAdoo is in. Do you think he's won the respect of the locker room? Because there's kind of signs that discipline has slipped under his watch on and off the field.
Yeah, it's been a rocky beginning for Ben McAdoo. There's no doubt about it. And when you look at the whole big picture, you know, he had to put out the fire with Josh Brown's domestic violence issue during the summer. Now you're looking at Odell Beckham maybe losing control of his emotions in the Vikings game, followed by Eric Flowers shoving a reporter, an inexcusable act after the Green Bay game. Plus, you're seeing a lot of penalties crop up. I don't think he's losing the locker room. I think it's way too early for that. I think he is very well respected by the players. They glow about him. I think it would be too early for otherwise. You know, once he gave them a good first impression in the summer, I think they started to believe in him. I think that they have not been such a disaster that they would start to wonder whether he's a good coach. Yeah. I think the discipline might be an issue, but I don't think it's a sign of his coaching ability. I think it's, you know, probably frustration right now more than anything else. And I would assume that they will get that turned around. Now, we'll check back on that in about 10 weeks and see if it has. But I don't think he's going to suddenly run a, you know, sinking, undisciplined ship.
Yeah, we'll see this week, you know, when they come out against Baltimore. And then when they go overseas, you know, see how they react to that change of scenery.
Exactly. It's more of a long-term question, I think, than anything else. We got another question from at AlanD22, who asks, how is it with all the offensive line trouble we have that we went into this season with no fullback and no blocking tight end?
Yeah, that seems to be a running theme with this offense. You know, they don't have enough protection options for Eli in the passing game, and they also don't have a lead blocker in the running game. So they had Will Johnson, who kind of served as a tight end and a fullback. He got hurt, out for the year, naturally. Same thing with Nikita Whitlock. And they haven't really replaced that role. So Eli's like flying, you know, his back unprotected when he goes back for a pass. And, you know, the holes haven't been open for the running game. And, you know, a fullback can certainly, you know, an extra body being hurled into the line can certainly open up some holes. So I don't know what they were thinking when they did this. They may have to go out and find themselves a fullback or a blocking tight end at some point because, you know, Larry Donnell is constantly hurt. Will Ty is a little small. I don't know if he can handle the blocking assignments that they want him to do. And Jarrell Adams is relatively new. He's a rookie. You know, he just started to get his feet wet last week. So, you know, I think this is an issue. And I think if they got themselves one or the other, fullback or a tight end that could block, it would certainly help the offensive line and running game woes.
Yeah, and that Will Johnson injury really hurt them. They weren't expecting it. I think they were okay without a fullback only because they didn't really use one much last year, but they thought they could get away with it with Will Johnson. But as soon as he went down, there definitely has not been a replacement.
Right, and then there's no fullback, you know, option coming out of the backfield, you know, to kind of keep people honest in the box. So, you know, they really should try to look into that. I know it's 5 weeks into the season. There's probably not a lot of people out there on the street looking for a job that can do this. But, you know, it certainly would help, in my opinion. Okay, Ralph, here's a question for you from at Eric Levitt. And he's asking, if Eric Flowers doesn't get better, how far back does that set this franchise, considering Eli's time is ending?
Well, I guess that depends on what they do if he doesn't get better. Let's face facts. He's a first-round pick from a year ago. You don't give up on first-round picks. So he will be a guy that you would think, once they installed him as the left tackle last year, you know he's going to be the left tackle this year. He's probably got next year, too, before they think about replacing him. And then you're talking about protecting a 36-year-old quarterback. And if that doesn't work out, they've got to go out and find another left tackle. So I guess the answer to that is, how long are they going to be willing to stomach his struggles? If he doesn't get any better this year, then next year, they're in a position where they think they have to win now or in the next couple of years. Next year, they're going to have to think about hitting free agency and spending some money on a left tackle. And I know they tried to find a right tackle this offseason, and maybe that's going to turn out to be a mistake. Maybe they should have been in the left tackle market and move Flowers over. Maybe that would have been better. But the answer of how far they get set back is really, it just depends on what's their next move if he's not any good.
Right. He's only 22. I mean, they've got to give him a little bit of time, I think, to ferment. And, they could swing him over to right tackle and find themselves a left tackle. I mean, that was an option earlier, but they took that off the table, and that scared away a lot of potential free agent left tackles.
Meanwhile, I guess this is sort of tied into this question. Our next question from social media, John, is, well, I get this a lot, actually. What is wrong with Eli, and has he lost his swagger?
Yeah, it certainly looks like he has, Ralph. I mean, he doesn't look like the same player that won two Super Bowls, that's for sure. In this offense, you'd figure he'd be comfortable going into year three. He looks skittish. He's making poor decisions. He's throwing the ball erratically. He's not taking shots deep where they need to be taking them deep. They have three great wide receivers. Why aren't they throwing the ball downfield and spreading out those defenses? He also looks like he's giving up on plays. He just spikes the ball right away when he doesn't see what he wants, so he doesn't get hit. That's what it looks like. And, I don't know. Does he have the same desire that he did several years back, or is he just going through the motions? It doesn't seem like he's that kind of a guy to me.
I don't understand it. Yeah, I don't think he's going through the motions. I think he is, and I talked about this in the opening of the podcast, that I'm not too worried about Eli Manning, and I think it has more to do with the situation around him. I agree with everything you said. They have to go downfield more. The problem with that is the offensive line is struggling. It's not like he's got time to look downfield. You watch that game against the Packers, how many times, and NBC did such a great job of clocking this, how many times did Aaron Rodgers have 5-6 seconds to sit back there? Eli never gets that. And I think what you saw in the Vikings game, the pass rush was so ferocious. Part of their strategy was, don't take the sack, don't throw a dangerous pass, just spike the ball and start over. And yeah, it made it look like, okay, he's skittish, he just wants out of there. And probably a few times he did spike it a little too early, but I think that was their game plan. And I think they knew that, they had to do something because the offensive line is just not giving him the time to work.
I see. But the thing is that he's taking a 2 or 3 step drop. He's too close to the line of scrimmage when he's throwing the ball, first of all. He needs to take maybe a 5-6 step drop on some of these plays. Just give himself a chance to throw the ball downfield.
Yeah, not enough. Maybe that's a strategy they should consider.
Okay, Ralph, here's a question for you now from @CMBeckham24. And it ties into the last question. Why has the offense been so conservative this season?
Well, a lot of Ben McAdoo's offense, when you look back the last couple of years, is in a sense conservative, and this was thought of as a good thing when he first got here, because a lot of people were a little frustrated with Kevin Gilbride. Most of Kevin Gilbride's passes were downfield passes, and they are low percentage passes. It was a vertical, attacking passing game. Ben McAdoo came in, and it was the more modern version of, let's spread the field, let's quick drops, quick passes, get the balls in the hands of the playmakers. If the playmakers aren't making plays, it becomes conservative. It becomes 5 or 6 yards at a time. Right. But it worked. And this year it's not working. And I think the reason is, I just always keep going back to that offensive line. And I also go back to this. Odell Beckham is really struggling right now, and it's not necessarily just his fault. You look at the way the defense has been playing him since that Saints game. He's got everybody on his side of the field, and when he catches the ball, they're letting him have the catches. And granted, he didn't have him in the Green Bay game, and that was Eli's fault. But they're letting Beckham have the catches as long as they've got three guys around him to make sure he gets no yards after the catch, and that completely diminishes his effectiveness, and that makes everything look conservative.
Yeah, that's true. You know, but, you know, you do have Sterling Shepard. You know, he's been getting some targets, but Cruz didn't get any targets last game. And, you know, I was wondering why that happened. Did Eli just not look at him? Just didn't have the opportunity?
It's a good question. I am about halfway through the coach's tape where you can watch the, you know, the all 22 overhead view of it. And he's not open much in that game, that's for sure. And certainly there were opportunities he could have gotten him the ball, but he did not. That was not Victor Cruz's finest game either, and he had some pretty good coverage on him.
Right.
All right, let's flip to the other side of the ball. We got a couple more questions we got to get through fairly quickly. John, with the front four of the defense not getting home, why aren't the Giants blitzing more?
That's a really good question. I think that they're being a little conservative and tentative on defense too, that they're hoping that front four can provide the pressure. They've been providing pressure. They just haven't been getting home. And, JPP and Vernon have 8 pressures each, and that's good enough for top 10 in the league. But they only have 1 sack each. And sometimes some of these quarterbacks, they're unflappable. They'll stay in that pocket or they'll step aside from the rush. You know, you've got to make contact with the quarterback. They're not getting the quarterback hits either. What the Giants should do, in my opinion, I know they try Casillas once in a while. They haven't really tried Devin Kennard, who showed a little pass rushing prowess a couple of years back. He had, I think, 4 or 4.5 sacks at the end of the season when they started to line him up on the edge. They haven't tried that yet this year, from what I've seen. You know, they do shoot Collins in there once in a while when Nat Burhey is healthy. You know, they miss him. He can shoot in there on a safety blitz, but, you know, they really have to try something to loosen up the opponent's blocking scheme so these guys can get home to that quarterback.
Yeah, I don't disagree. I'd like to see some more blitzing, definitely from the secondary. Getting Kennard in there wouldn't hurt. Getting Odighizuwa some action. He's barely been involved in the defense. Wouldn't hurt either. It's a little dangerous blitzing with your secondary so banged up, but I think it would definitely help. John, we got one more question from you to me, I guess, Twitter. What you got?
Yes, it's from at Brian Daly NJ, and he's asking, which position will Jerry Reese be looking for in next year's draft? And he's assuming it'll be a top 10 pick.
Ever the optimist. That is fantastic. It's always, of course, a little early to be looking at the draft. I think that if you look at everything could change with a couple of injuries. The Giants might need a running back next year. I still think the way to build a team is in the trenches. It would not, they spend all offseason looking for a right tackle. Drafting another tackle would not be a bad thing, I don't think. But I am certainly not ready to give up on this team and say they're going to be in the top 10 of the draft. That's for sure. No. They're 2-3. They're right in the thick of this. I think they've got to run. I really do. I don't know that they're better than middle of the pack, but I think they still can get back to that middle of the pack.
Especially in this division, the way it could fall. I mean, right now, Dallas and Washington and Philly are flying high, but, you know, that can change in 2 or 3 weeks.
No question about it. John, great stuff. Thanks for joining me today. It was kind of fun answering these questions. Hopefully we got to the general themes that everybody wanted to answer. But as always, I appreciate your insight.
Thanks, Ralph. Good talking to you.
All right, that was John Fennelly, our blogger over at our Giants blog. You can follow his work at SNY.TV/Giants, and also you can follow him on Twitter at SNYGiants as well. Great stuff, and thanks for all the questions, too. We had a blast doing that. Let's quickly, before we end the show, look ahead to the Giants' next game. Really, it's not a must-win, but they're playing a Baltimore Ravens team that is absolutely one they should be. This is a team that at 3-2 is struggling a little bit right now. They just fired their offensive coordinator, Mark Trestman, and that's never a good sign. They did that because they are ranked 22nd in the league offensively and in scoring less than 20 points a game. They just lost wide receiver Steve Smith to an ankle injury. They haven't been able to settle on a number one running back. It's a team that is definitely in a bit of transition. And as a result, they are struggling. And, you know, if you look at the Giants right now playing Minnesota and Green Bay, they weren't out of those games by any stretch of the imagination. They had their chances. They lost. They had their flaws, no doubt about it. But they were in those games against two really good teams. The Ravens have been in games against bad teams. They have struggled with the Buffalo Bills, the Cleveland Browns, the Jacksonville Jaguars, even the Washington Redskins, who I still think are more mediocre than anything else, even though I did pick them to win the division. It's, you know, I don't think they're more than a 9, or if they're lucky, a 10-win team, and they've played like worse. So this is a Ravens team that every one of the teams they've faced have had a chance to beat. And this is the one where the Giants have to have the breakout. Really, they're getting set for their trip to London against a tougher-than-expected Rams team in a couple of weeks. They need to get out of this slump and just have something to change the conversation and something to feel good about, to get away from, you know, the is Odell Beckham losing his mind? Is Eli Manning on the downside of his career? Is Eric Flowers a bust? All of these questions. Is Ben McAdoo in over his head? All these questions disappear with one win. And when you come home and face a very average team like the Ravens, you know, losing this game is the one that could set them into a tailspin, because there's no excuse for it. They are as good as the Ravens, if not better. They think they have better personnel, and whether you like him or not, as much as he's struggling, I would still take Eli Manning over Joe Flacco any day of the week. We will see soon enough if the Giants can indeed stop their tailspin. Make sure you check out all our coverage all week long at SNYGiants.com or SNY.TV/Giants. You can also follow me at RVacchianoSNY on Twitter for all of the latest Giants news. You can follow our guest, John Fennelly, at SNYGiants. Thanks very much to John for joining us. Thank you to our producer, Jason Pateri, and our wizard technician, Adam Schaefer, doing his best work behind the scenes. Really appreciate both of you guys. Thank you again for all the questions. Enjoy the Ravens game, and we'll see you next week right here on Giants Goal Line.
This has been Giants Goal Line, part of the SNY.TV audio network.